KALW.
You know, one thing I don't respect is people who only bring it when they win it. We call those front runners. So I appreciated the crowd tonight and the energy that they brought to the game.
The Warriors are in their first playoff run since they left Oakland. We'll hear how one longtime fan never lost hope.
There was always light at the end of the tunnel. There was always thinking that the Warriors was going to get better.
Keeping the faith for nearly five decades. Then we'll meet a senior whose life was changed by self-discovery.
And he said, "That's it. I'm done. It's either me or your activism." And I said, "Okay. Bye-bye."
That's coming up. I'm Hannah Baba, and this is Cross Currents. With our Golden State Warriors back in the playoffs, we thought to revisit KALW's award-winning podcast, Bounce. It tells the story of the Warriors franchise and the many people whose lives are entwined with the team and its fate. Here's the host of Bounce, Ben Trefney.
Basketball is a lot like life. You win some, and you lose some. It's been an up-and-down week for the Warriors. Emotionally turbulent. Kind of like what we've all experienced the last couple of years. The Dubs have blown out the Memphis Grizzlies at home.
A 30-point win.
And been blown out on the road. Seen their nemesis, Ja Morant, hurt.
I even saw him let out a scream in frustration. He put a towel over his head.
And then lost their own coach, Steve Kerr, to a positive COVID-19 test. Before the Warriors tried to close out the Grizz in Game 5, NBA Today reporter Kendra Andrews asked superstar Stephen Curry about their game plan.
And he just turned around and looked at me and said, "Whoop that trick. That is our game plan."
Oh, my goodness.
That happens to be the hype song for Memphis. And as they whooped Golden State, taking a 52-point lead into the fourth quarter, the home fans let Curry know. Instead of sulking, the Dubs started bobbing their heads to the beat, and Draymond Green got to dancing with the crowd.
You know, one thing I don't respect is people who only bring it when they win it. You know, embrace crowds when you win it. We call those front runners. Not front runners, you know. We got our ass kicked. That's all right. It happens. But you don't be front runner, you know. When you spew it out, you gotta be willing to take it and not hide from it, not duck from it, not run from it. Embrace it. So I appreciated the crowd tonight and the energy that they brought to the game. You know, if they want to whoop that trick, we're gonna whoop them together.
What's next? Let's find out. This is Bounce, a show about the Golden State Warriors and their place in the Bay Area. I'm Ben Trefney. No matter what happens this year, this version of the Golden State Warriors is historically good. Steph, Klay, and Dre have made five NBA Finals, have three championships, and they're not through yet. But this Dubs team is just the latest iteration. During the team's half century plus in the Bay Area, there have been lots of other stars, more than a few scrubs, and a fan base that's been with them practically no matter what. Bill Walsh has more.
I grew up hearing stories about past Warriors from my old basketball coach, Keith Burrows. He grew up in San Francisco and remembers going to his first game like it was yesterday.
I was 10 or 11, and the game was played at the Cow Palace.
You can listen to this crowd in the Cow Palace. They are beginning to go wild.
The NBA has changed quite a bit since when Keith was a kid. From 1965 to 1970, the league fluctuated from 9 to 15 teams, a far cry from the 30 franchises that exist today. As former Warriors beat reporter Art Spander recalls,
it was a bush league. It was a minor league.
But after their championship run in 1975, the Warriors' following began to grow.
Since that point, I think the Warriors then created a fan base. They had a parade and everything, and the fans really picked up.
The Warriors are back. You yep. couldn't give tickets away for this franchise when this season started. Now it's the hottest property in San Francisco and Oakland.
All the way from 70s, maybe 74, 75, from there on. Any Warrior game I can go to, I would go.
They are literally jammed to the rafters here in the Oakland Coliseum to watch this one.
But the Warriors wouldn't stay at the top for long.
So the reign of the champion has ended here in Oakland, California today.
The team kind of faltered after that 76 season.
Golden State throws the ball away again. Al Addles is up. Disgusted look on his face. What's happened to his team?
Through the 80s, the Warriors were a team trying to find their way. They would occasionally make the playoffs, but never get very far.
The intensity of the NBA playoffs continues to build. Which team will advance? The question about to be answered.
Warriors get to the playoff. Oh, yeah, they get to the playoff, but they get knocked out in the first round. Then they won't get in the playoff the next two or three seasons.
Welcome to CBS Sports coverage of the 1987 playoffs. Today, it's first round.
Then in 1988, Coach Don Nelson arrived and immediately introduced the Bay Area to a new brand of basketball.
Hardaway for three. Big three-pointer by Hardaway. Nelly, boy, did Nelly love that.
Oh, man, the running gun.
What a pass from Mullen. And Golden State is made.
Nelson's high-powered offense had two objectives: score fast and score a lot. It was built around a trio of players who were taking the NBA by storm.
Run TMC. Chris Mullen. Mitch Richmond, Timmy Hardaway. Man.
More excited about basketball in the Bay Area than they've been since the late 70s. How about Chris Mullen? Is this guy putting on a show?
Chris Mullins, wore number 17, crafty, and can shoot the lights out.
Mullen with that quick release. Boy, what a beautiful shot.
With his signature flat top, the forward from Brooklyn was a fan favorite and would go on to be an NBA Hall of Famer.
Behind the back to Hardaway, what a pass. Hardaway lays it up and in. Unbelievable.
Yeah, great play.
Tim Hardaway was true ball.
Hardaway backs off on top.
Bravo! Oh, and he exploded, it goes.
A lightning quick point guard from Chicago who played college ball in El Paso, Hardaway embarrassed defenders nightly with his patented move, the UTEP two-step. It would come to be known to the world as the killer crossover.
Here's the killer crossover by Hardaway. Welcome
the crossover, the killer crossover.
Look at that crossover. My, my, my. That's the clinic on the crossover right there.
Mitch Richmond was a rock. There's another one. Great player.
86, Philly. Richmond using his muscle. He does it again.
The future Hall of Famer from Kansas State was the NBA's Rookie of the Year in 1989.
I mean, they were really showtime. It was really fascinating watching those guys play.
It got the entire Warriors bench on its feet, and the Warriors lead it 79-67.
They were filling the seats, but they weren't competing for championships. So in 1991, Don Nelson broke up Run TMC when he traded Richmond to Sacramento.
Former Golden State Warrior Mitch Richmond knows this building. Knocks down that 19-foot jump.
The Warriors lost in the first round of the playoffs again that season. And Hardaway and Mullen started selling hamburgers for McDonald's.
These two powerful Warrior teammates only disagree on one thing. McDonald's new Chris and Tim Burger.
Tim and Chris Burger.
Chris and Tim Burger.
They had a nice team, but they was missing something.
Then at the 1993 NBA draft, something came.
Ladies and gentlemen, I'd like to report a trade. Orlando has traded the draft rights to Chris Webber to Golden State.
Rejected by Chris Webber. Did you see the yell he let out after he blocked that one? You think Chris Webber isn't
the power forward from the University of Michigan was the top player in college basketball. And he could do it all.
6'10", 6'11", that can handle the ball, push the ball to the floor, rebound, score, had great hands.
We see the great behind-the-back pass by Chris Webber.
For that one player, the Warriors wagered their entire future.
Anthony Hardaway and three future first-round draft picks.
A steep price. And at first, Webber seemed worth it.
He had it. Great rookie season. Just what the Warriors needed.
Oh, what a jam!
He won the NBA's Rookie of the Year on a Warriors team that featured another rising star in guard Latrell Sprewell.
Into the hands of Sprewell, fast break down to Weber, he turns, look up behind the back, and the step and the foul, what a play by Weber!
And I noticed that the fan base was really getting much bigger. And I remember now, thinking back, seeing a lot of kids wearing Weber and Sprewell jerseys.
Weber was supposed to be the future of the franchise, but he and Coach Nelson couldn't see eye to eye.
Nelson had a reputation of being hard on rookies, and he just picked the wrong player to be hard on.
So after one season, Weber was traded to the Washington Bullets, and the high price of betting its future on one man would cost the Warriors for a decade.
Three future first-round draft picks, which will be exercised at the earliest in the years 1996, 1998, and 2000.
Don Nelson left the following year, and things got bleak for the Golden State Warriors. Mullen and Hardaway were aging and battling injuries, and by 1997, both had been traded. So the team was left in the hands of all-star Latrell Sprewell.
Sprewell!
Uh-oh, something like that sometimes can get him going.
But he didn't get on with new coach P.J. Carlissimo. So much so, he grabbed him and choked him out of practice.
Latrell Sprewell is on suspension for attacking Golden State Warriors coach P.J. Carlissimo.
Sprewell was gone, and it would be 15 years before the Warriors would have another all-star. For the first time in nearly a decade, attendance numbers actually dropped. The Warriors were in the wilderness.
Good effort by the Warriors in coming back, but that will not do it for Dave Collins. It's another Golden State loss, 105-100.
But something funny happened. The fans returned.
Joe Smith trying to pump up the Warriors.
The Warriors didn't make the playoffs for 12 straight seasons. But even with rosters full of disappointing draft picks and bad contracts, the team started selling out games again.
We're seeing Todd Fuller, we're seeing Adama Foyle, we're seeing Tony Dell, and we see Tracy Murray with
I attended a lot of games because I love the game, regardless of how others felt about basketball. I was there at most of those games.
Back and down, spin move, nice move by Eric Dampier of the Golden State Warriors, and the crowd here appreciates it.
Thank you, and welcome everyone to Oracle Arena in Oakland, California, and you have the definition of a raucous crowd. The first home playoff game in 13 years.
The year was 2007. Don Nelson was back coaching the Warriors, and he assembled a team of undersized veteran misfits that snuck into the playoffs on the final day of the season.
Richardson sets his feet for three.
They were matched up against the Dallas Mavericks, who had the best record in the NBA that year.
The fans have been ready. About an hour before the game, they started their Let's Go Warriors chants. They even did it through part of the national anthem.
The team slogan was We Believe. Warriors faithful made Oracle one of the loudest arenas in the NBA, and the team rewarded those fans.
The Golden State Warriors have pulled off the greatest upset in the history of the NBA playoffs.
In the next series, point guard Baron Davis authored one of the most electric moments in team history.
Baron shouts it down on Kirilenko's head. Oh my goodness. Are you kidding me?
We celebrated that night. We had a great night. You know, it was fun for the city of Oakland and for our team and our franchise. And, you know, after that, and, you know, it was back to business.
Business broke up the We Believe Warriors as Baron Davis left in free agency and the team dissolved after the following season.
There was always hope. There was always light at the end of the tunnel. There was always thinking that the Warriors was going to get better. They was going to get a key player.
Commissioner David Stern has the card for a team that used 47 different starting lineups. Here's the commissioner. With the seventh pick in the 2009 NBA draft, the Golden State Warriors select Stephen Curry from Davidson College.
It was all made up when Steph Curry came into the picture.
40 for Curry, 30 and a half. America had heard about him, and now we know about him.
The best shooter in the draft.
The Warriors knew they found something special with the sharp-shooting, baby-faced guard.
Is he feeling it?
Yes.
He played well right away, but he kept getting injured.
Ankle coming out of the pack.
And Curry hurt himself. Yeah, Curry's shaken up on the play. He's had ankle injuries throughout his career.
While Curry was struggling to stay healthy, other pieces were beginning to fall in place.
The Golden State Warriors select Klay Thompson from Washington State University.
Warriors are having fun. Klay for three.
And then, like Run TMC before them, a new trio formed.
The Golden State Warriors select Draymond Green.
Block from Green. Draymond Green, end to end.
After years of nobody in the NBA wanting to be on the Warriors, now players were starting to come here. Good players, too.
Way off. Here come the Warriors. Iguodala
rushing at Bogut. Blocked by Bogut. Livingston sees an opening and throws it down. Wow.
Oh, the crossover by Durant. Takes to the rim. What a move by Kevin Durant.
The last missing piece was a rookie coach with connections to NBA royalty.
Michael in traffic to Kerr. 15-footer.
With Steve Kerr leading the talented team, the Golden State Warriors started their run of historic success.
That was an excerpt from a story produced by Beau Walsh in 2019. You can hear the full piece and more stories like that by subscribing to Bounce on your podcast player. And tell us what you think by giving the podcast a review. You're listening to Cross Currents from KALW News. I'm Hannah Baba. May is Older Americans Month, and we're celebrating with a series that profiles San Franciscans who are 80 and older. It's 80 over 80 San Francisco.
A lot of things have changed. A lot of things have not.
My time is short now. I can't be bothered with people I don't like.
Marcia Peterzell has been an activist for peace her whole life. And as you may guess, it hasn't been an easy path or a straight one. Here's Marcia.
My mother was not an educated woman. She was first generation born in this country. And it was important to her, because she only went to fourth grade, that my sister and I became teachers, because that's what a woman should do. So I went to college and I became a teacher and married the proverbial doctor. I knew I wanted children and I couldn't deal with my sexuality at that point. So I married him and I got me two kids. A girl in 1961 and a boy in 1964. And I read The Feminine Mystique in 1963. And The Feminine Mystique liberated my life. Could have been a doctor's wife, you know, had a quote unquote good life, you know, as a doctor's wife. And it just, that wasn't the drummer that I had in my head. In 1967, I went to a Women's Strike for Peace meeting and came out of it as the executive director of the group. And I didn't tell my husband for days. And then I told him and he said, that's it, I'm done. It's either me or your activism. And I said, okay, bye-bye. That was a sad story, but it was okay. Meantime, I took a job as a printer in a women's press collective in the National Press Club building. And we printed up birth certificates and all kinds of things to help young men not go into the army. And that's where I met my first woman lover. I had decided that the next woman I fell in love with, I was going to do something about it. So anyhow, I came out with this woman. And in January of 71, so that's 50 years ago, she and I came out here. She knew one person out here. I knew nobody. And we slept on the floor, the one person that she knew, until I could get an apartment. And I started my life out here. You know, I was talking to my therapist today, and I said that I don't want to come out of this period without having felt like I lived. I'll be 82 in a month. So I don't want to feel like these last years I just kind of dawdled them away, that I didn't really enjoy the day, or I didn't really enjoy moments, at least, of the day, that I didn't have pleasure in my life, given that I don't have that many years ahead of me, kind of thing. I grew up, you know, in a household that kept secrets. You know, a lot of kids have great memories of being a kid, and I'm not one of them. So I'm working at, and it's a day-to-day struggle to remind myself that I'm basically happy now. I used to be a very depressed person, and so I don't want to be that person. I've been in love with somebody for 30 years, and it's been a remarkable awakening for me and my soul. And, you know, I really feel in my heart of hearts I've had a good life. Been full, it's been rich, and it continues to be. I keep looking for ways to show love. And they always, you know, there's always opportunities for that.
That was Marcia Peterzell, interviewed for the 80 Over 80 San Francisco Project. The lead audio producer is Aussie Linas Goodman. Anna Chodos is the project director. You can find more profiles of San Francisco seniors at KELW.org. And before we go, here's some local music.
1, 2, ready, go.
This is Oakland's Ye Ming. She'll be playing at San Francisco's Bottom of the Hill this Saturday. Today's Cross Currents team includes David Boyer, Angela Johnston, Jasmine Ramirez, Kristen McCandless, Gabe Graben, Victor Tenz, Shirin Adid, Lisa Morehouse, Shia Levitt, Sunni Khalid, and Ben Trefney. Our opening theme music is by the John Santos Quintet, as interpreted by Dawood Anthony. For Cross Currents, I'm Hanat Baba.